Ancillary Justice by Anne Leckie. Read by Adjoa Ando. It's strange. You hear stories about ancillaries, and it seems like the most awful thing, the most viscerally appalling thing the Ratchai have done. To invade and take, what, half the adult population? And turn them into walking corpses slave to your ship's AIs? Turned against their own people? If you'd asked me before you annexed us, I'd have said it was a fate worse than death. She turned to me. Is it? None of my bodies is dead, Divine, I said. And your estimate of the typical percentage of annexed populations who were made into ancillaries is excessive. You used to horrify me, said the head priest to me. The very thought of you near was terrifying. Your dead faces, those expressionless voices. But today, I am more horrified at the thought of a unit of living human beings who serve voluntarily. Because I don't think I could trust them. Chapter 1. The body lay naked and face down, a deathly grey, spatters of blood staining the snow around it. It was minus 15 degrees Celsius, and a storm had passed just hours before. The snow stretched smooth in the wan sunrise, only a few tracks leading into a nearby ice-block building. A tavern. Or what passed for a tavern in this town. There was something itchingly familiar about that outthrown arm, the line from shoulder down to hip. But it was hardly possible I knew this person. I didn't know anyone here. This was the icy back end of a cold and isolated planet, as far from Ratchai ideas of civilization as it was possible to be. I was only here on this planet in this town because I had urgent business of my own. Bodies in the street were none of my concern. Sometimes, I don't know why I do the things I do. Even after all this time, it's still a new thing for me not to know, not to have orders to follow from one moment to the next. So I can't explain to you why I stopped, and with one foot, lifted the naked shoulder so I could see the person's face. Frozen, bruised and bloody as she was, I knew her. Her name was Saivadan Vendai, and a long time ago she had been one of my officers, a young lieutenant, eventually promoted to her own command, another ship. I had thought her 1,000 years dead, but she was undeniably here. I crouched down and felt for a pulse, for the faintest stir of breath. Still alive. Saivadan Vendai was no concern of mine anymore, wasn't my responsibility, and she had never been one of my favourite officers. I had obeyed her orders, of course, and she had never abused any ancillaries, never harmed any of my segments, as the occasional officer did. I had no reason to think badly of her. On the contrary, her manners were those of an educated, well-bred person of good family. Not toward me, of course. I wasn't a person. I was a piece of equipment, a part of the ship. But I had never particularly cared for her. I rose and went into the tavern. The place was dark, the white of the ice walls long since covered over with grime, or worse. The air smelled of alcohol and vomit. A barkeep stood behind a high bench. She was a native, short and fat, pale and wide-eyed. Three patrons sprawled in seats at a dirty table. Despite the cold, they wore only trousers and quilted shirts. It was spring in this hemisphere of Nilt, and they were enjoying the warm spell. They pretended not to see me, though they had certainly noticed me in the street and knew what motivated my entrance. Likely one or more of them had been involved. Saivadan hadn't been out there long, or she'd have been dead. "I'll rent a sledge," I said, "and buy a hypothermia kit." Behind me, one of the patrons chuckled and said, voice mocking, "Aren't you a tough little girl?" I turned to look at her, to study her face. She was taller than most Nilters, but fat and pale as any of them. She outbulked me, but I was taller, and I was also considerably stronger than I looked. She didn't realize what she was playing with. She was probably male, to judge from the angular maze-like patterns quilting her shirt. I wasn't entirely certain. It wouldn't have mattered if I had been in Ratch space. Ratchai don't care much about gender, and the language they speak, my own first language, doesn't mark gender in any way. This language we were speaking now did, and I could make trouble for myself if I used the wrong forms. It didn't help that cues meant to distinguish gender changed from place to place, sometimes radically, and rarely made much sense to me. I decided to say nothing. After a couple of seconds, she suddenly found something interesting in the tabletop. I could have killed her right there without much effort. I found the idea attractive. But right now, Cyverdon was my first priority. I turned back to the barkeep. Slouching negligently, she said, as though there had been no interruption, "What kind of place you think this is?" "The kind of place," I said, still safely in linguistic territory that needed no gender marking, "that will rent me a sledge and sell me a hypothermia kit." "How much?"
200 shan.
At least twice the going rate, I was sure.
"For the sledge, out back. You'll have to get it yourself, 100 for the kit."
"Complete," I said. "Not used." She pulled one out from under the bench, and the seal looked undamaged.
"Your buddy out there had a tab."
Maybe a lie, maybe not. Either way, the number would be pure fiction. "How much?"
350.
I could find a way to keep avoiding referring to the barkeep's gender, or I could guess. It was at worst a 50-50 chance. "You're very trusting," I said, guessing male, to let such an indigent. I knew Cyverdon was male, that one was easy. Run up such a debt. The barkeep said nothing. 650 covers all of it?"
"Yeah," said the barkeep.
"Pretty much. No, all of it. We will agree now, and if anyone comes after me later demanding more or tries to rob me, they die." Silence. Then the sound behind me of someone spitting.
"Rajai scum."
"I'm not Rajai," which was true. You have to be human to be Rajai.
"He is," said the barkeep, with a smaller shrug toward the door. "You don't have the accent, but you stink like Rajai."
"That's the swill you serve your customers." Hoots from the patrons behind me. I reached into a pocket, pulled out a handful of chits, and tossed them on the bench. "Keep the change." I turned to leave.
"Your money better be good."
"Your sledge had better be out back where you said." And I left. The hypothermia kit first. I rolled Cyverdon over, then I tore the seal on the kit, snapped an internal off the card, and pushed it into her bloody half-frozen mouth. Once the indicator on the card showed green, I unfolded the thin wrap, made sure of the charge, wound it around her, and switched it on. Then I went around back for the sledge. No one was waiting for me, which was fortunate. I didn't want to leave bodies behind just yet. I hadn't come here to cause trouble. I towed the sledge around front, loaded Cyverdon onto it, and considered taking my outer coat off and laying it on her, but in the end I decided it wouldn't be that much of an improvement over the hypothermia wrap alone. I powered up the sledge and was off. I rented a room at the edge of town, one of a dozen 2-meter cubes of grimy grey-green prefab plastic. No bedding, and blankets cost extra, as did heat. I paid. I had already wasted a ridiculous amount of money bringing Cyverdon out of the snow. I cleaned the blood off her as best I could, checked her pulse, still there, and temperature, rising. Once, I would have known her core temperature without even thinking. Her heart rate, blood oxygen, hormone levels. I would have seen any and every injury merely by wishing it. Now, I was blind. Clearly she'd been beaten, Her face was swollen, her torso bruised. The hypothermia kit came with a very basic corrective, but only one, and only suitable for first aid. Cyberden might have internal injuries or severe head trauma, and I was only capable of fixing cuts or sprains. With any luck, the cold and bruises were all I had to deal with. But I didn't have much medical knowledge, not any more. Any diagnosis I could make would be of the most basic sort. I pushed another internal down her throat. Another check. Her skin was no more chill than one would expect, considering, and she didn't seem clammy. Her colour, given the bruises, was returning to a more normal brown. I brought in a container of snow to melt, set it in a corner where I hoped she wouldn't kick it over if she woke, and then went out, locking the door behind me. The sun had risen higher in the sky, but the light was hardly any stronger. By now, more tracks marred the even snow of last night's storm, and one or two Nilters were about. I hauled the sledge back to the tavern, parked it behind. No one accosted me. No sounds came from the dark doorway. I headed for the centre of town. People were abroad, doing business. Fat, pale children in trousers and quilted shirts kicked snow at each other, and then stopped and stared with large, surprised-looking eyes when they saw me. The adults pretended I didn't exist, but their eyes turned toward me as they passed. I went into a shop, going from what passed for daylight here to dimness, into a chill just barely 5 degrees warmer than outside. A dozen people stood around talking, but instant silence descended as soon as I entered. I realized that I had no expression on my face and set my facial muscles to something pleasant and non-committal.
"What do you want?" growled the shopkeeper.
"Surely these others are before me?"
Hoping as I spoke that it was a mixed gender group, as my sentence indicated, I received only silence in response.
"I would like 4 loaves of bread and a slab of fat. Also 2 hypothermia kits and 2 general-purpose correctives, if such a thing is available."
"I've got 10s, 20s, and 30s.
30s, please."
She stacked my purchases on the counter.
375.
There was a cough from someone behind me. I was being overcharged again. I paid and left. The children were still huddled, laughing in the street. The adults still passed me as though I weren't there. I made one more stop. Cyberden would need clothes. Then I returned to the room. Cyberden was still unconscious, and there were still no signs of shock as far as I could see. The snow in the container had mostly melted, and I put half of one brick-hard loaf of bread in it to soak. A head injury and internal organ damage were the most dangerous possibilities. I broke open the 2 correctives I'd just bought and lifted the blanket to lay one across Cyverdon's abdomen, watched it puddle and stretch, and then harden into a clear shell. The other I held to the side of her face that seemed the most bruised. When that one had hardened, I took off my outer coat and lay down and slept. Slightly more than 7.5 hours later, Cyverdon stirred, and I woke.
"Are you awake?" I asked.
The corrective I'd applied held one eye closed and one half of her mouth, but the bruising and the swelling all over her face was much reduced. I considered for a moment what would be the right facial expression, and made it.
"I found you in the snow, in front of a tavern. You looked like you needed help."
She gave a faint rasp of breath, but didn't turn her head toward me.
"Are you hungry?"
No answer. Just a vacant stare.
"Did you hit your head?"
"No," she said, quiet, her face relaxed and slack.
"Are you hungry?"
"No."
"When did you eat last?"
"I don't know."
Her voice was calm, without inflection. I pulled her upright and propped her against the grey-green wall, gingerly, not wanting to cause more injury, wary of her slumping over. She stayed sitting, so I slowly spooned some bread and water mush into her mouth, working cautiously around the corrective.
"Swallow," I said, and she did.
I gave her half of what was in the bowl that way, and then I ate the rest myself and brought in another pan of snow.
She watched me put another half-loaf of hard bread in the pan, but said nothing, her face still placid.
"What's your name?"
I asked. No answer.
She'd taken Kef, I guessed. Most people will tell you that Kef suppresses emotion, which it does, but that's not all it does. There was a time when I could have explained exactly what Kef does and how, but I'm not what I once was. As far as I knew, people took Kef so they could stop feeling something, or because they believed that, emotions out of the way, supreme rationality would result, utter logic, true enlightenment. But it doesn't work that way. Pulling Cyverdon out of the snow had cost me time and money that I could ill afford. And for what? Left to her own devices, she would find herself another hit or three of Kef, and she would find a way into another place like that grimy tavern and get herself well and truly killed. If that was what she wanted, I had no right to prevent her. But if she had wanted to die, why hadn't she done the thing cleanly, registered her intention, and gone to the medic, as anyone would? I didn't understand. There was a good deal I didn't understand, and 19 years pretending to be human hadn't taught me as much as I'd thought.